Hello everyone and welcome to the Slash Filmcast. I'm David Chen and with me is...
Vendra Hardwar.
And joining us today, her writing has appeared at Fangoria, Rue Morgue, and Birth Movies Def. She also has a column at Dread Central called Gender Bashing. Anya Stanley, welcome to the Slash Filmcast. Anya, how are you doing today?
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on. We appreciate you filling in for our third co-host, Jeff, who is still recovering from his recent eye surgery. But happy to have you, Anya, especially because you're a big fan of horror and writing about horror films, yes?
Absolutely. I'm also a big fan of Stephen King himself. I am a constant reader.
Excellent. Nice. Well, really grateful to have your perspective on today's episode of the podcast. Today on the Slash Filmcast, you can find more episodes of the show at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. All we're going to be doing on this episode is reviewing It Chapter 2.
To the losers.
We made an oath.
Swear. If it isn't dead, if it ever comes back, we'll come back to it.
We didn't stop it.
Pennywise.
The clown.
We can't let it happen again.
Hello?
Kate! Hello.
That was from the trailer for It Chapter 2, the newest film by director Andy Muschietti. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. 27 years after their first encounter with the terrifying Pennywise, the Losers Club have grown up and moved away until a devastating phone call brings them back. So this is the much-anticipated follow-up to the smash hit It Chapter 1, directed by Andy Muschietti. I think many people were really looking forward to this movie because the first one was such a success and it was pretty good. This follow-up also
thing horror movie ever, right?
It was certainly up there. It broke a lot of records. I think to this moment, it is still the highest grossing September release out there, if I'm not mistaken. Broke a lot of records, did really well. And then when they announced the cast for It Chapter 2, I got super excited. A lot of great actors in the cast, including Bill Hader and Jessica Chastain. So was very psyched for this movie. A lot to look forward to. Got a little bit discouraged when I heard that this movie would be almost 3 hours long. But hey, maybe it would figure out a way to justify that runtime. So Anya Stanley, I guess my first question for you is, do you feel like this movie deserves to be 3 hours long?
No, I do not. And I love a good long movie. I'm a staunch supporter of A Cure for Wellness and Midsommar and a lot of movies that push towards a 3 hour runtime. But this one just didn't earn it. It was filled with fluff and it was filled with a good half hour of things that did not need to be there. Another half hour was filled with things that really should have been set up in the first movie and just feel shoehorned in this movie.
Hmm. So your overall thoughts on the movie, it sounds like you weren't a fan?
I was not a fan, which is very disappointing because I was just as hyped as you guys were for this film. And I love, love, love the first film. For me, It Chapter 2 does the opposite of what a proper sequel should do. It discards the best elements of the first film and it refuses to choose a tone and stick with it. It doesn't work for me.
What do you think were the best elements of the first film?
For me, the best elements of the first film were the way that the scares were constructed. I talked about this in my review, which I just turned in today, actually.
Where can people check that out, by the way?
That's going to be at Vaugh Visage, VaughVisages. Oh, my gosh. I just had a white Russian. And so it is amazing that I was able to spell that on the first try. I probably didn't spell that right. But yes, that is where you can find it. It'll be running tomorrow morning. But yes, the scares, the way that they're constructed is actually a subversion of the normal jump scare. And I know a lot of people hear jump scare, they go, oh, those are overdone. Those are terrible. But if it's done right, The Thing, The Shining, even Rosemary's Baby has a jump scare. And when it's done correctly, it works and it's effective. And what it does, the very first one, they take the jump scare, which usually has a little bit of tension and then a turn where the audience feels comfortable for a moment. If you think back to Poltergeist, and there's that scene with the kid who's during a thunderstorm, he sees a clown on his chair, like a little toy clown. He gets freaked out. He looks at the clown. He covers the clown with a blanket. Then the tension ratchets up when the clown disappears. And now you're like, oh, crap, where's the clown? Then the kid hears a noise under his bed. He looks under the bed, and there's nothing there. Once he lifts up that bed sheet and there's nothing there, there's a brief moment of comfort, like, okay, nothing's going to come out and scare me. Then the kid stands up, and the clown was behind him the whole time. Oh, my God. That's how a great jump scare works. What it does, the first film, not the second one, they take that tension and they just keep raising it without that moment of comfort. So the clown shows up in front of a kid who lost his toy boat. You're already uncomfortable because it's a freaking clown in a gutter. Then after that, the tension just continues to rise and rise and rise as you can see that the kid is slowly kind of sort of falling for Pennywise's tricks. And there's no moment of comfort or a rest for the audience until the clown finally bites this kid's arm off and drags him into a sewer.
And they show it. They show it. That I was surprised by, yeah.
After that climax, that's when you're allowed to rest as an audience member. And so many of the scares in the first film are constructed like that, where it's just ratcheting, increasing tension, and
the garage the slideshow is perfect. I think that's absolutely the best part of the first movie for me.
Absolutely. What the second film does is not that. They go back to the old school method of jump scares, where they'll give you that brief moment of rest, but what they give you after that brief moment of rest is what they've given you before. It's recycled scares. Or they undercut the scare with some kind of baffling needle drop or some kind of bit of humor that doesn't quite land the way it's supposed to, and it undermines the scare. Now it's not as scary as it's supposed to be. The moment hasn't landed, and the tone is just weird. When I was in the audience at my screening, the laughs were kind of scattered as if people weren't sure if they should be laughing or not.
I don't know
if you guys got that or not.
Yeah, it's like a badly edited comedy at times, basically.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't choose a lane, you know. It tries to be. It's almost like it doesn't have the full confidence of its convictions, right? It's the first movie played it pretty straight when it came to the scares or a lot of them, but this movie adds in a lot of humor and
Also Bill Hader. Bill Hader is sort of like this. I think he is the MVP of this movie. Like, I think he is doing so much, but I don't think they quite know how to handle his energy and how to like fold that into the rest of it. So he's allowed to be like great and quippy and funny, but yeah, everything around him doesn't quite like match that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it sounds like you weren't a fan of a lot of things about the second film, including the tone. Let me ask Devinder Hardwar, what did you think of It Chapter Two?
It too long. That's it. That's it. I will say there's a lot to enjoy in this movie. I think of the first movie, like, it's honestly none of the scares actually really worked for me. I think because it was trying to me, I felt like I was seeing it try to subvert the way scares typically work in horror movies. So a lot of times it just feels like, oh, I see, you know, this is going to be a scary scene, and it ends up being a scary scene. And I didn't feel like surprised or shocked by any of that. I think the best moment in that first movie is that garage scene where it's just like this strange thing is happening and the kids don't know what to do and they're freaking out and it gets weirder and weirder and then like, you know, all goes to hell. So I think for me, like, I wanted more of that in this movie. I think there are some sequences that are really well done. You know, this is a movie about people basically coming back home and the discomfort of that and dealing with childhood traumas and things like that. I think looking at it in that broader respect, like, this movie, there's a lot going on here. I just think, it's not that they need to pick a lane, but it just feels like there's just too much. There's too much traffic. There's too much stuff going on for you to really focus on the characters and like the core story. And even though this thing's so long, they also didn't even build up Pennywise, I think, as big as they could have, certainly as big as the book does. Whereas in the book, he is sort of like this cosmic force of horror. Right. And they kind of hint at that here, but not really, not to the same degree. And I would have liked to see, you know, the time spent towards that rather than following some tertiary characters that we don't really care about. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of fat to this movie. The first one works because it's, it's over 2 hours long, but it feels a lot tighter. It feels a lot more focused. This one just feels shaggy as a movie. Not really a fan of that, but it looks amazing. I think just like the first movie did, I will say that. I love just gazing at this thing. I love the adult cast all around. Bill Hader's fantastic. James McAvoy kind of wasted. He is manning so many franchises now. And this one, he just seems like, well, I'm here. I guess the fan, was he one of the ones the fans wanted to? Because I feel like Bill Hader and Jessica Chastain were the big ones people were trying to bring on. Jessica Chastain is here, not really doing much, which is unfortunate given her level of talent. And it's not just the comedy. I feel like this movie has weird, wild tonal shifts all around. It starts with a brutal, brutal homophobic attack that honestly left me kind of breathless. Like, I was not expecting this movie to go so just like it is brutal. Like, it's a vicious attack. It feels like something you typically see in a 90s movie about, you know, that's actually more focused on, you know, gay and lesbian stories. And this kind of comes out of nowhere. And I didn't quite expect that. There's also a scene that's basically a brutal domestic attack. And it just feels like the movie goes from like, you know, a 3 or 4 to like 11 really quickly. And that was just scary, I guess, on a dramatic level. It's not even the fact that it doesn't feel like a horror movie thing. It just feels like they didn't know how to manage that level of drama in a movie like this. But yeah, those are my thoughts. Dave, what did you think?
Well, Devendra, I guess you could say that in Jeff Cannata's absence, my thoughts on It Chapter 2 could best be summed up in the form of a limerick. This film is an adaptation, a horror film that tries to be fun, but it's a big bloated bore that makes us try to ignore. It's a remake of It Chapter 1. I mean,
adaptation.
Yeah, I mean, wow. That was kind of rough.
That's something.
I mean, look,
Shakespearean right there.
I started it, you know, like 10 minutes before we started recording. So,
just
you know,
this movie, you're like, well, I'm starting this thing. I guess I got to finish it. I got to make a 3-hour long.
We'll figure it out later.
We'll do it live. We'll do it live. I share your opinions on both of your opinions on this movie. I thought it was a huge disappointment, but let's start with, I want to mention a couple things about the opening of this film. First of all, as you mentioned, Devendra, it does begin with a brutal attack that, Anya, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that is actually from the book, It, correct?
It is from the book.
So it is, it's not, it's, yeah, go ahead.
It's given much greater context in the book. There's a scene right after that attack that happens at the police station, which gives much more context to the homophobia already present within the town of Derry.
Right. Here it feels like bigotry porn, basically.
It does. And yeah. I'm interested to see what people think who have not read the book and are just going in blind on that and how they're going to read that brutal attack in the beginning of the movie.
So I have not read the book, and I think that when you use imagery like that, it is very inflammatory. You know, like, I'm not against using imagery like that categorically, but I do think that when you use imagery like that, you have to justify it somehow. You have to be trying to say something with the movie. And I think the movie does try to say something, but I don't think it does it particularly well. I think that there is...
They never even mention those attacks again.
Yeah,
right?
It does tie into like a theme of homosexuality that is present in the rest of the movie that we can get to in spoilers, but... Yeah.
And that the movie never also ever makes really overt, too. Like,
yeah,
it's weird. It's really weird.
I agree. I mean, I think that on a very general level, that opening scene with the homophobic attack is like, it's theoretically about the moral rot of the town. But the problem is that this movie, to be honest, it feels like a Harry Potter movie, which is to say, I was never a big fan of those movies. Yeah. And what I felt like those movies suffered from greatly is they were mostly just like fast forwarding through all the plot points that were in the book. And that's how this movie felt to me, is like, hey, we just got to hit a bunch of these beats, a bunch of these scares, a bunch of these moments without imbuing them with any significance, without pausing to kind of reflect on what the movie itself is trying to say. And that's quite a shame because it's somehow a movie that feels way too bloated and long and yet doesn't have enough substance to it, right? Like, that's how it feels to me.
It hits all of its points. It hits every point, but it each point is flat. It doesn't have any weight to it.
Yeah. Like, and I think that opening scene with that attack is like a great summary of what's wrong with this movie is, wow, when you open with something that brutal and that kind of attention-grabbing and sensationalistic, you better have the goods to back it up.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think the movie fell far short of that. And there's a lot of like, I would say the only other imagery in the movie that's comparable to that is like child murder, right? Like there's children getting murdered in this movie as well.
It's an It movie. You expect child murder here and
on
there,
screen.
You know?
Yeah.
On screen.
Yeah.
There is, I will say, that domestic assault sequence is also kind of, it felt cartoonish. It felt like, you all of a sudden, you know, we're watching a scene of a husband just being extremely cruel and brutal and abusive to his wife. And that's also part of the book and certainly part of that character. But yeah, it's not, there's no nuance to it. It's certainly, I think of the way like the way Mike Flanagan writes his characters, right? Who is, I think, you know, probably my favorite horror director working right now. Like you look at Haunting of Hill House, all those characters, everything that they're going through, it's all tied into who they are as characters, so even when they go through traumas you kind of feel something, whereas in this movie it just feels like here's Beverly older and things are rough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that what you're describing is exactly what I'm talking about. You're saying, oh yeah, that scene was in the book, that's X scene was in the book, Y scene was in the book, and it's like and the movie is like hitting all those scenes, but it's like hey when you jump from the brutal gay assault to the, you know, extremely frightening domestic assault, it's like you have to again, you have to really justify shifting tones that wildly, and I don't feel like the movie does that. I think what the movie's message ultimately is, which I think, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about in spoilers, but it's about like childhood trauma and how we deal with it, is very muddled. You know, like I don't know that I really felt like the movie landed its message. And I don't think the movie feels like it lands its message, as evidenced by the fact that there's as many endings in this thing as Return of the King. So I think that this is a movie that was pretty painful to watch. If I wasn't reviewing it for this podcast, I probably would have walked out of this one just because it was so brutal and long.
I will say I did not feel like that. I didn't feel like it was too bad. It felt a little fluffy. It felt like, oh, they really are just banking on the success of that first movie to make a really luxurious 3-hour-long horror movie. It didn't quite, like, it certainly didn't deserve that. But I didn't hate the time I spent in this movie. It just felt, oh, this feels like something made for Stephen King fans or people who really love certain elements of the book. Certainly tightening up would have made it better. I don't hate this movie. I will say that. Like, it's better than the miniseries. Have you guys, Dave, that miniseries?
Let me say a couple things. Let me say a couple things I liked about this movie, mm-hmm. Chapter 2, actually. One of them is that so at the beginning of this movie, they basically, you revisit all of the characters from the first film as older people, right? Mm-hmm. And I love that kind of stuff, where within a span of like 3 minutes, you have to convey who a person is, you know? And I feel like the movie did a great job of that. I just kind of eat that stuff up, and I thought the movie, like, I'm excited to learn, like, all these people who I actually quite enjoyed, watching these characters in the first film, now we get to revisit them under different circumstances, and the movie needs to demonstrate a lot of economy in showing you who they are. So I did enjoy that. I think Alex Skarsgård is great, is it Alex Skarsgård? Which Skarsgård is it that plays?
I believe it's Bill.
Bill Skarsgård. Sorry, apologies. I knew it was one
Alex
of the Skarsgårds.
Alex is taller and older. Yeah.
Yeah. So I enjoyed Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise. I think he brings a lot to it. Like, Tim Curry is the best thing about that miniseries, but
yes.
But Bill Skarsgård kind of makes this character his own as well. Like, he brings its own sort of menace and longing to this character that I think is pretty interesting. And mm-hmm. so like the movie is not a total waste for just that alone. I've already mentioned how good the cast is. Bill Hader and his humor does a lot to redeem the movie and make it watchable for me. And also a lot of the imagery is really striking and interesting.
Yeah.
I think Anya, You articulated well some of the challenges with the jump scares. Like, the jump scares are less interesting this time around. Mm-hmm. But I do like a lot of the imagery. I do think there's some indelible images, some indelible frightening images in this movie that I will mm-hmm. probably I'll remember for a while to come.
There are some extended sequences that I think are just really well done horror movie sequences, too. And one of those was basically the trailer. You know, so, or one of the trailers.
Oh, yeah.
I'll talk more about that in spoilers, because I really like what they did there.
The production designer, I think, deserves a medal for this movie. Yeah. Like, as far as the set pieces that they came up with, especially in the third act, I guess we'll get into that more with the spoilers section of the recording. But the set pieces were absolutely stellar. They were enclosed. They were overwhelming. Even when some of them are brightly lit, some of them are dim, as you'll find in most horror movies. But a lot of them were just absolutely visually stunning. And it did a lot for the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. For the film, even if the scare component didn't quite work out the way I wanted it to, the atmosphere was great.
At certain times watching this movie, I definitely felt like, wow, we are getting like basically, you know, horror fantasy, like large scale. This felt like Lord of the Rings at some point, at least in terms of the imagery. Like there are points where you see the characters in a line just walking through Derry too. It's like, oh, this is Fellowship of the Ring. This is just them going on their quest. And it felt like, you know, something on that scale. So I think to a certain degree, I can't hate this movie. I'm very glad it exists. I just wish it was a little tighter, a little more polished.
So you bring up It, the miniseries, right? And I'll just say, when I watched that miniseries as a kid, it scared the hell out of me.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Cause Tim Curry's great. Yes.
I mean, I remember the miniseries opens with like, one of the kids looking at like, Georgie's older brother looking at like a photo of Georgie, and like the photo like winks at him right in the miniseries. And as a child, that is like one of the
John Ritter starts crying too.
It's one of the most terrifying things, because the idea that like this clown can somehow distort the very nature of reality. You know what I mean? Yes. Like it was one of my first horror experiences, and because it was on TV, it was so accessible. And so I remember being quite scared of it. Of course, looking back.
Have you gone back to that, Dave?
No, I haven't, but I've seen clips of it. I watched like the Honest trailer of it.
I feel like you should just try to sit and watch that thing. I think I lasted 30 minutes or so. Like, yeah.
Here's what I'm going to say, though, Devendra. And Anya, I want to hear your thoughts on this It miniseries. I assume you've seen the It miniseries, right?
I have, unfortunately. Yeah.
So here's what I'm going to say about the It miniseries, okay? Despite all of its flaws, of which there are many, it uses many practical effects. And I think if you look at, like, for instance, there is the Chinese restaurant scene that happens in the original miniseries and then in this movie. In this movie, it's like the CG is extremely hit or miss. It's extreme. Like, some of the CG looks awesome, and some of the CG looks very, very bad. And I think the Chinese restaurant scene is very, very bad. Whereas they use practical effects in the miniseries. And yes, some of those effects are like pretty dated looking, but I just kind of think the practical effects do an overall better job of standing the test of time than like bad CG.
I do think it's more in that scene, from what I recall, because I haven't rewatched that bit lately. They never really like focused too much on it, because it was like, you know, cheap practical effects in a way. Like they had to kind of hide it a little and kind of make you scared like that. Whereas in this, the CG, and this is what I don't like throughout this movie, actually, is like the CG is just so good. We can do anything. We can create anything in a computer. So now they want to show it. You're going to see the weird like spider babies and other crap on the table. And they're going to give each thing its time, and they're going to show it to you clearly. And I don't feel like that leads to it being scary to me.
I don't agree that it's about what they're showing you. I think it's about the quality of the CG. And I think the CG in the Chinese restaurant scene in particular was just very bad. Like, there's some CG in the movie there's some CG that's excellent that I'm like, oh, wow, like, that is indistinguishable from reality. And that CG is good, but just bad CG looks... Let's say, like, bad CG is way worse as an impact on a movie than bad practical effects are, in my opinion.
Sure. But I will say this, Dave. Like, even good CG, my thing is, like, if you're staring directly at it, right? If they made Jaws today, you know, with the perfect power of CG and the CG shark, just seeing the shark all the time does not make it more scary. It is the dread. It is the not seeing it.
Oh, yeah, I agree that CG is a temptation that many filmmakers use as a crutch unnecessarily. I agree. But I don't think like CG itself is bad in any way, for sure. So, Anya, what did you think of the It miniseries compared to this new film? And like, now that we have basically another miniseries, like almost 5 hours worth of It movies, right?
They basically wanted to make this into two movies, right? Yeah. I think they had asked about that.
Yeah, so we basically have another It miniseries. How do you feel like this one compares to the old one?
Well, I feel like with the old one, when the first film came out in 2017. I guess we could call it the first film, because the other one was a miniseries. When it came out in 2017, just before it came out, I decided to go all out and I reread the book, which I hadn't read since I was like 14, 15. So it was strange to come back to it as an adult. And then after I was finished with that, I watched the miniseries, which I found at a thrift store. And when I watched the miniseries, I barely made it through that thing. And I remember as a child being absolutely terrified of both Pennywise and, like you were saying, with the picture frame winks. Not only does it wink, but there's a later scene where the picture frame of Georgie fills with blood.
Yeah,
and I remember having nightmares about that sequence. And so it definitely hit me hard as a kid when I saw it, probably way before I was supposed to see it. But coming back to it now, it was just, it was just terrible. If you were to put chapter one and chapter two together, and I think Muschietti is actually coming up with a supercut, as I've heard through the grapevine on Twitter that he's planning a supercut of both films together, which I would be interested to see. I feel like it's better than the 1990 miniseries. But as far as the CGI goes, versus practical effects, I understand that in the 1990 miniseries, they were using what they had available at the time.
Yeah.
And that with this film, you know, the filmmaker is using the resources available at the time. But sometimes it's done well and sometimes it's not. In chapter one, I know it's not actually titled chapter one, but I just keep calling it that to differentiate it from chapter two.
Yeah, same.
There's a sequence with Pennywise coming out of a fridge. And it looks like almost like a contortionist coming out of a fridge. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment where he spins halfway around, where his body's completely twisted around. And it's something that a real contortionist could never do because they would be dead. So that part was done with CGI. And I thought that was really well done. And it added to the scares of the scene itself. But in It Chapter 2, there's a scene near the very end with Pennywise. And it's basically only his head that's used. And the rest of the vision that he creates is CGI. And that took away from the scene for me. It took me completely out of the scene. And I just, I had wished so badly that they had done some kind of practical effect with it, which, right, I think is possible. And it goes back to one of my beefs with the film, is that I wish Muschietti had a little bit more confidence in Bill Skarsgård to hold the frame, because he definitely can.
Yeah.
And he has so much physicality in the first film, you know, so much of him jumping around and using his body in strange, imposing ways that he didn't really get a chance to do in this film. He was kind of put more into the shadows in this film, and you really only saw his face for most of the film. And I really wish that he had been allowed to shine a little bit more, because Pennywise is awesome. And he was one of the best elements of the first film, was Bill Skarsgård's performance as Pennywise. And in this film, it was mostly like starring Bill Skarsgård's face and maybe a little bit of his body here and there.
Yeah, or a CG version of it, basically.
Right? Or a CG version of it. And that took away from the film for me. It knocked a star off for me, basically.
Mm. All right. Well, we have much more to discuss in spoilers for It Chapter 2. But before we get to that, we got to thank all the people who donated to the podcast this week. We haven't thanked donors in a few weeks, so this is going to be a bunch of people, many of whom donated to honor Jeff Cannata, who's out right now still recovering from his surgery. But we got Arnold T. from Irvine, California, donating. We got Daniela Olivos, who is donating on behalf of Dennis Johnson. And she says, Dennis is my most talented, funniest Stanford friend who introduced me to the podcast years ago. Dennis, if you're still listening, miss you wherever you are. Thank you for introducing me to these guys. So thanks, Daniela, for that donation. This donation made me a little bit, felt a little bittersweet to me, because it's like, hey, this is like a really awesome friend that Daniela had from Stanford, who maybe it sounds like they don't keep in touch anymore. She's using the podcast to reach out to Dennis. And so, Dennis, if you're out there, Daniela is still thinking about you, and she appreciates you turning her on to this podcast. So,
aww.
Thanks also to Thomas W., who writes about our summer movie wager. He has a personal summer movie wager, and he includes a bet that the Slash Filmcast collects the loser's debt. So this year, I thought it prudent to bet on Dark Phoenix and New Mutants. so I'm donating for the victory, Jim Corbett. Wow, betting on New Mutants is a rough thing to do for the summer. So, yeah. Anya, I don't know if you're aware, we do this thing called the Summer Movie Wager, where we try to predict the top movies of the summer by domestic box office. And everyone on the podcast makes their top 10 lists. People out in the world do as well. And it looks like someone put New Mutants on their top 10, which like was a very pretty bad decision because New Mutants was never released.
That is unfortunate.
And it may never be released. We'll see. We also got Alex T, who gave a very generous donation dedicated to Jeff Cannata, James Stewart, Christy from Bremerton, Washington, Colin Gooding from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Walter B., who Walters the Walter, Ellen from Melbourne, Australia, Tobias from Berlin, who writes, every week, you guys help me remember why I fell in love with movies. Thank you. And Jeff, please get well soon. So if you'd like to donate to this podcast, you can always go to paypal.me/filmcast. That's paypal.me/filmcast. You can also go to /film.com. Click on the /filmcast tab. Use the PayPal links on the side of the page. All the money you donate does go help us defray the cost of doing the show and putting it on for you. We never want you to donate if it in any way causes you any hardship whatsoever. But if you want to throw a few bucks our way, we'd really appreciate it. And you can always support this show for free by going to Apple Podcasts, leaving a review for the /filmcast. We'd really be grateful for that.
Please do. Yeah.
Please do that. Right. It literally takes...
Those are the things that gets podcasts like highlighted, you know? So that's good. That's good for everybody.
It's good for everyone. Give us a star rating. Takes a few seconds. You know, every little bit helps. So yeah, if you would go to Apple Podcasts, leave a review for us, we'd really appreciate it. All right, let's get to spoilers for
one quick thing.
Sorry, Devendra. Yeah, so
no problem.
So the Decatur saga continues. A few weeks ago,
is full circle.
Yeah,
yes.
A few weeks ago, people from Decatur, Georgia started using the donation section to donate to the /filmcast and then try to arrange a meetup through these donation messages that I read. And after multiple failed attempts, they were finally successful. And it seems like you were invited to our Decatur meetup this week,
I was in Georgia a couple of weeks ago. My family lives not too far from Decatur, so I swung by with my brother Danny and his friend Nadim, and I got to hang out with Jordan, DJ for Zahn, Patrick, Morema, and Sam. And yeah, we hung out for a couple hours. We had some drinks, we had some great food, and some great chats, you know, about movies and all this fun stuff. And I just want to, you know, send a shout out to all those folks. Thank you for arranging all this, and it was fun meeting you all. And hopefully, maybe I'll see people there soon too. It's nice to know we have a crowd of fans in the middle of Georgia. It's always fun.
Yeah, the Decatur saga continues. Thanks for making Devendra feel at home there in Georgia. Let's move on. Get to spoilers for It Chapter 2 starting right now.
Now you're looking for the secret.
You're going to see this coming?
No.
But you won't find it because, of course...
You're not going to see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret.
You want to be fooled.
Let me start by saying that before we get to spoilers for It Chapter 2, I am going to spoil... The Darjeeling Limited, the Wes Anderson movie. Anya, have you seen The Darjeeling Limited?
I have, and I'm interested to see how you connect these two.
Well, I remember reviewing The Darjeeling Limited with Devendra Hardwar on this podcast many years ago. And, I mean, that's not a very good movie, in my opinion.
Nope. Not at all.
But one of the things that I remember Devendra saying about that movie is the very end of that movie, it concludes. So it's about these three white dudes who are like visiting India and experiencing personal growth while experiencing the exoticism of another country. Right. And they conclude the film by literally throwing their baggage off of a train, I think, right? Or they like throw their baggage off so that they can get onto the train and move on with their lives. So, something like about their personal baggage is how the movie ends. And I remember Devendra pointing that out and saying it was, you know, staggeringly obvious as a metaphor. That's what I thought of at the end of this movie when their childhood scars literally vanish from their hands.
I think you can thank Stephen King for that, though. There are a lot of bits of this movie that are, I remember reading it in high school, that there's a lot in that book that would not translate to movies. I'm glad they certainly left certain things out of the first It.
I know exactly what part you're talking about.
Yeah,
too.
That's rough.
Are you talking about the orgy scene? Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Child orgy, baby. It feels like this movie kept more of those things in, even when they, a little too blunt. I think his stuff works better on the page than it does just seeing it on the screen like that.
So, Anya, curious about if you had any favorite scares, any least favorite scares from the latter half of this film.
Oh, the least favorite scare is definitely with, who was the hypochondriac? Eddie. Mm-hmm. Yes, Eddie. There's a scene where he goes downstairs to a basement and he hears the calls of his mother, and she is strapped to a gurney, like a medical table.
And also his very large mother. And that's
very large.
That's the joke. That's the joke. His mother is fat. That's the entire joke of that.
You know, the actress who plays his mother is also the same actress who plays his wife in the film.
What? Oh, I didn't know that.
How on the nose is that?
That's amazing.
Yes, I thought that was actually a really good choice. I called it while I was watching the movie, and I gasped out loud when I looked at her face.
And of course, they joke about the wife's weight too, and they joked about who's it, the other new kid's weight as well. Like this feels like very 80s writing, basically.
Yeah, you can tell when the book was written, definitely. So Eddie goes downstairs. There's a scene that's just chock filled with dread, where his mother is in danger of being not killed, but like
attacked
I guess by a thing. And Eddie, you know, unties her, and he leaves her, actually. Doesn't he leave her?
He
abandons his poor mother, and this thing chases him, and it vomits onto his face. Now, that in itself can be kind of goofy, okay, but it's accompanied with one of the most confusing what the fuck needle drops I've ever heard in my life. And it's just, my jaw dropped during this scene. Like, what is happening? Why did you do that to this terrifying moment? That could have been absolutely like an all-time scare for the film.
And it was also like for 3 seconds, too. It was like, you didn't even need the music drop because that clip, that edit was so short. It reminded me of a much more fun random music drop of Aquaman, when Mantis is making his new suit, and it just ends up becoming an 80s action montage for no reason. I love, like, I can totally abide like random music drops like that. In this movie, it just felt like weird and so short, not even to be like meaningful.
I was watching Red Letter Media's review of this movie, and I think they described it really well. It felt like somebody accidentally left it on the like final cut timeline.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
temp music,
right? Like, let's experiment with this music, and oh, for that one shot, we accidentally left in this. By the way, the song is, I think, "Angel of the Morning" by Juice Newton. Is that right?
Yes.
And so it is very, very bizarre, and I think it completely undercuts the moment as a scare, right? It's like, oh, this is supposed to be terrifying, but oh, it's funny, but only for 3 seconds? Very, very, very strange.
Yeah. I will say, so the thing I was talking about was the whole Beverly sequence, going back to her apartment. That was basically the first trailer for this movie, and I kind of love that they did that. They just kind of let that scene play out, and it's really well constructed, even if the scares are a bit just like, it's an old lady just acting weird off camera or out of focus. Like, that's the scary bit. But the finale of that in the trailer was just the old lady like coming at her. And in the final movie, it is like giant naked booby monster, basically. And the fact that it was different honestly scared me a little. Like, that was like, oh, I was expecting this one thing. This is not that thing. And I'm reminded of like the first time I saw, was it the American cut of The Descent, I think, and like, so I had seen the UK cut before, and that had a completely different ending, and seeing something you have already seen, it goes completely another way.
Yeah,
it's a little terrifying, honestly. Like, the world, oh, I thought the world worked this way, but it doesn't. Yeah,
that was a good scare. That was one of my favorite scares of the film. Anya, you're talking about a scare you didn't like. Is there any scare that you appreciated in the film?
And that was the one with Beverly. And that's because it adheres to that formula I was talking about with the first film, where the dread is just ratcheted up and there's not a single moment of rest until she finally gets out of the apartment.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good one. Pennywise's application of his powers is so random, you know? And I think that's a that's actually a problem, because like I feel like some level of predictability actually makes things more scary. Like if you understand a monster and like you feel like you understand the constraints, the rules, you get stakes. You're like, oh, I understand. Like the room is shaped like this, and therefore the character has X percent chance of getting. You know,
he can
like
basically do anything. Yeah,
yeah. But the character can basically do anything, and he's extremely selective. And in the first film, that like kind of made sense, because I think my understanding, Anya, and this is not very clearly explained in the film, as far as I recall, but like the more they scare the kids, like the more the creature scares the kids, like the more delicious they taste when they eat them.
Yes,
is that right?
The tastier, yes. So that's why he has to ratchet up the dread the way he does, rather than just jump on them.
Yeah, and but in this movie, like it's not as clear, like that. And it's also a situation where the characters learn at the end, hey, the way we get out of this is by not being scared of you. But that's exactly the same thing that they came to the conclusion of at the end of the first film, right?
Yeah. So but like they forgot everything. So I actually like the bit that I've always liked that narrative element, that they basically forgot the trauma and kind of what that represents. It's clunkier here for sure. But yeah, it basically ends up this movie being the Simpsons episode 2 of just don't look or stop believing in the scary thing.
Right. Which it just again, it feels like they already learned that lesson, and even if they all forgot it, like Old Spice guy, you know, Isaiah Mustafa, like he doesn't forget it. He didn't forget that, you know. So like, why? Anyway, and then the whole turn with him at the end of like, oh, you lied to everyone. You're actually wrong.
Not really communicating well.
The answer like was in you, but the true answer that you didn't have to lie about was in you all along. I mean. Okay, why even?
They kind of run up. They run up to Pennywise's place too without like a clear plan. Like we spent 2.5 hours, you know, building up to this plan, and he doesn't explain to them, okay, there's going to be this ritual and we're going to do this thing and there's going to be this chant. Everybody good? Go. But no, all the information is just like, presented to them as they're running there. Not great. Not great.
And it's frustrating because in the book, this ritual is heavily, this takes up whole chapters. This ritual, the underground clubhouse, that they use that as almost a hot box to open themselves up for this ritual as children and as adults. Like it's a whole thing that actually should have been set up in chapter one if they didn't want to, because now that they're putting it in here, it feels shoehorned. And now people who are watching this film are going to go, why wasn't this? I don't remember this clubhouse at all from the first film.
I have
film,
no right? nostalgia for this thing that they now have nostalgia for in the movie.
Yeah, it's like, why didn't they put that? And that's another thing actually about, I mean, there's so many problems. Like, I'm just rattling them all off. But like, one of them is like I don't know if you guys could tell, but whenever they flash back to the younger losers, like they were all very obviously ADR'd, which is to say like their lines were re-recorded and probably had effects applied to them. My understanding was like many of them had to be de-aged because 2 years have passed, and like 2 years when you're that young, it actually makes a significant difference in how you look. And all those scenes with the young losers looked and felt wrong. Like they just felt off to me because of post-production stuff. I mean, I think everyone did their best. I think everyone worked really hard on it. It never quite felt right to me. And the fact that they're flashing back to stuff that, like, some of the stuff seemed to happen before the end of the first film, and some of it seemed to happen after the end of the first film. It just really was confusing why they're flashing back. Like, why do they need all that stuff in there? I found it to be all nonsensical. Like
it might have been better if they had extended this a little and actually made those two separate movies, like just to really let some of these things breathe a little more.
Right. I think that this film is perfect evidence that if you're going to adapt any kind of King epic like It or The Stand or the what was that other one that he did under the other name, Regulators, Desperation. If you're going to do any of those huge, huge tomes of his, you really have to do a full-fledged miniseries. You can't just do a couple of movies.
Like
there's
a
10-episode
series or something like that, right?
Right. It will not translate well if you try to cut corners. It'll show.
You know what else doesn't translate well, Anya? I think Stephen King's portrayal of Native Americans.
At first I was thinking like, okay, well, they really needed to dive deeper into this whole hot box mystical artifact thing. And I was like, well, maybe not. Because it's kind of like, it's kind of like that whole magical Negro trope that again, Stephen King is, unfortunately, he's pretty known for.
Kind of master of it, yeah.
Well, it doesn't help that Isaiah Mustafa's character is the one like presenting all the literally magical things to the rest of the crew.
Drugging the rest of the losers.
I think that if I think the way Native Americans are depicted in this movie is shameful. And I think that if it was like another ethnic group, or if it was like an Asian group or whatever, like I would be furious about it. I mean, I'm pretty furious about it already.
What exactly are you furious about? Just the fact that it's represented as like a ritual like this?
Well, just that it's like it kind of, in my opinion, it like otherizes them in a way that we've already seen many times before, and like I don't think it does honor to Native American rituals and customs. You know what I mean? Like
it exoticizes and others them in a way that we're at Poltergeist 2 levels of Native American fetishization right now.
Exactly.
In this
Thank
movie.
You. Exactly correct. Yeah, that's right. And I think that like certainly there's a time period in our history when we did that a lot. And whatever, like we didn't know any better back then, one could say. But I think we do know better now, and I feel like when you're making that adaptation, like you can change many things, and that's one of the things you could change, because I don't think it's aged very well. So, anyway, the ending of this movie. A lot of the movie is spent with people talking about how they don't like the ending of James McAvoy's books, and you know, most Stephen King books have like a writer in them, right? And it's kind of like a Stephen King proxy.
Are you saying he's writing himself into the book, Dave?
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah. He's literally in this movie talking about how the book endings are bad. So like you have, I mean, it feels interminable. It feels like a joke they beat to death, to be honest with you. Like,
why is Peter Bogdanovich in this movie? Like, there's just a lot of like inside jokes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. So all that said, they've been talking the whole movie about how, these books are really hard to end, or they don't end well. The endings are bad. Stephen King even says it himself. My question for you, Anya, is how did you feel about the ending of this film? Did you feel like it ended in a satisfying way?
Kind of. So first of all, with that, there's no other reason for that dialogue to be there about endings and about the need for closure being BS and all of that. It felt like that dialogue was there as a preemptive apology for the ending of this film itself.
Which is bizarre, because I feel like the movie ending is very neat. You know, like
I thought it was the closest thing to riding the ship that Muschietti could have done with an ending for this film, for a film that spent 2 hours doing things I did not like or appreciate. That last half hour or so did as much as they could to kind of correct course. And while I feel that the Native American aspect of it, the mystical aspect of it was unnecessary, once you introduced that whole Nightmare on Elm Street, you have no power over me, I don't believe in you, that once they introduced that ending, the mystical Native American portion of it was unnecessary, but I thought that the ending itself outside of that was really good. And that was the only part of the movie, that final act, where for me, the chemistry between the adult losers actually worked. Yeah. All the emotional beats landed as they were intended to. The humor helped enhance the narrative rather than undermining any kind of scary moments or emotional beats. I thought it worked as well as it could, given the circumstances.
Yeah, and it's a shame, because I think that the younger losers actually have like more chemistry overall than the older losers. I think I find them to be much more interesting as actors and more convincing than
I think
the ones
they also just like spent more time with each other too. Like, it feels like they hung out together, whereas the older losers are huge Hollywood stars. So it's like, okay, I'm flying in. I'm gonna do these things. There's a lot of funny stuff. Like, I think a lot of the cast said they reread the book and Bill Hader was like, fuck that. It's just funny things. Like, maybe not everybody was on the same page. And you could certainly tell that Bill Hader was on a different page than everybody else in this movie.
And to a degree, I can understand that, because the Losers Club themselves, they had only reassembled after 27 years of being apart. So it makes sense that the chemistry wouldn't be there right away. But I will say that I enjoyed the scenes with the kids way more than the scenes with the adults. And that runtime, that nearly 3-hour runtime, felt the heaviest during the one-on-one scenes between the adult losers. I was checking my phone a couple of times.
Yeah. Devendra, any thoughts on the ending?
I mean, it felt pretty matter of fact. Like, there weren't any real surprises thematically. I feel like it all kind of wraps up. One interesting thread I just thought as I was watching this movie, it does kind of, between the hateful, you know, homophobic attack at the beginning of the movie, the fact that all of Pennywise's, like, mouth-breathing henchmen, I guess, throughout the Bowers, they're all pretty hateful as well. And that whole scene with Beverly and, I guess, the ghost of Pennywise's daughter saying, oh, man, you know, he made it in this country without any handouts, not like people today. Really, really interesting to read some, you know, parallels between this evil clown and his hateful rhetoric and another one. I thought that was fun.
Wow. A little bit of a stretch there, Devendra, but fair enough. The only thing I didn't really like about the ending was how it felt like this movie ended like many different times. There's, oh, hey, we've defeated Pennywise. Nope, we haven't. Okay, now we've really defeated Pennywise. Oh, now we got a GTFO out of this cave that's collapsing, you know, and it's like, oh, okay, maybe the movie. Nope, now we got this letter thing we're doing. It's just like, hey, now Isaiah Mustafa's like leaving, getting up, and it's like, oh my gosh, like, how many endings does this movie need to have? Like, especially because I don't feel like most of the character arcs fully landed, you know? It's not like, oh, I want to see how Bev's storyline ends. Like, I want to see, it's more like, I felt like the movie was so scattered, trying to show us these random scares that we don't really care that much about, rather than working on character development.
What was with the funhouse scare? Like, really? Did we even need the funhouse mirror scare? Like, I understand on a character level why, but it's like, that's one way to take a major character on a completely different part of the map than everybody else. Not really helpful when you're doing something like that.
It's mildly... go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead, Anya. What were you going
to
say?
You know what? That kid didn't need to be in the movie at all. He did not need to be there. That was another 15 or so minutes. Every scene with the kid in it did not need to be there.
Well, what do you, what even happens to that kid? I mean, he's dead.
He's dead.
What happens to his family? Like, isn't his family upset about him being dead? You know,
like that guy that keeps following my son around went in after him.
Yeah.
Into this fun house.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Also, we didn't really get any confirmation or any like real good conclusion for Bill Hader's character and kind of what they're going through. Like, there's a lot of subtext about why he's crying over, you know, who died. But if you're going to do this movie, if you're going to start with a hateful homophobic attack, like, have some balls right. And like, say
the homophobia was shouted, but the actual homosexuality or the queer coding, as they might call it, is just whispered at the end.
Yeah. Well put. And I mean, I felt like this movie, here's the thing. Maybe I just don't remember It Chapter One very well. But I felt like this movie, like, retconned all the characters a little bit. You know, like, when one of the characters dies, they're like, oh, yeah, Stanley, he was the best. And I'm thinking, like, was he? Like, was he really that cool?
He's fine.
Yeah. And at the end, when the other guy died, is it Eddie that dies at the end?
Yes.
You know, they're like, well, Eddie would always know how to make us feel safe. And I'm like, did he?
What? Did he?
Like, would he really be? You know, and it's just like, I think when you watch a movie like this, like, ideally, you, the viewer, feel the same thing that the characters feel. You know, like, you're like, oh, man, yeah. Like, Eddie was awesome at doing blank, you know? But I never felt any of that. And to me, that felt like a failure of the films.
Have you guys, by the way, have you read Mike Ryan's interview with James Ranzone, who plays Eddie?
No.
No.
It's kind of insane. It's a long, crazy, funny thing. But he's like, I think at one point he's like, yeah, if I can make this this clown movie work, I could be the next Dom DeLuise. Like, okay. Okay, James Ranzone. All right. It's just funny. So look that up. That's over at Up Rocks.
Yeah. All right, Anya, any closing thoughts on It Chapter 2?
I wish that it was an hour shorter and that several pieces that didn't need to be there were cut. I just wish that they had translated the book a little bit better than they did.
Yeah.
And that it's very pretty, though. I will say that. It's good to look at. The visuals are gorgeous. And I would love for the production designer and the art director and set decorators to get nods for all the awards that they could possibly get, despite whether or not I actually like the film.
All right. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Slash Film Cast. You can find more episodes of this podcast at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from adamwarrock.com. Our spoiler bumper comes from filmmaker Kyle Hillinger. This episode was produced by me, David Chen, and edited by Beatty Zhang. Stay tuned to hear what we'll be discussing next week. In the meantime, Anya Stanley, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
All of my work is contained in an online portfolio at anyawrites.com. That's anyawrites.com. And you can visit my gender bashing column, which is way more positive than it actually sounds, monthly at dreadcentral.com.
All right. How about you, Devendra?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at Devendra, and I write about tech at engadget.com. Keep an eye there for all our iPhone coverage for this crazy week. And yeah, we're going to be spinning up the podcast soon, so keep an eye out for that.
Find all my stuff at davechen.net. And also, I have a new podcast called Culturally Relevant, where I talk with cool people every week. Check that out at culturallyrelevantshow.com. Next week, we're going to be reviewing the Dewey Nix classic Slackers on this podcast.
Quote unquote classic.
Yeah. Slackers, which is Slackers. We literally lost a bet, and that's why we're reviewing Slackers with Jermaine Lucier.
Do not watch this movie. I will say, don't watch this movie. Just listen to our episode.
Yeah, listen to the episode. Don't watch this movie. We usually say, like, watch the movie and be ready for the episode. Do not watch this movie.
Do not give Sony Crackle the ad money for this movie, please.
All right, that's going to do it for the Slash Filmcast this week. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. We watch the-